you're never going to be knocked down to a place where you won't stand back up. So when I was going through those difficult times as our economy was sucking so bad, I kept asking, what's the point in this? You know, what's the good thing here? And when she told me, sell everything, let's live in an apartment, I realized that's what it was for. Because now I have zero thought that my wife was ever a gold digger, which she never demonstrated. But she was willing to stay with me even if I was broke. She didn't care. Being rich again now surely feels better. And money cures most things, it does. Except I realize I'm not attached to either side. That if I have nothing, I'm going to find joy. If I have a lot, I'm going to find joy and spread the joy.
Hey guys, JB the Wolf is in the Wolf's Den for what's going to be one of the greatest podcasts of all time. This I have no doubt of, because of my guest, who's a friend, who's brilliant, talented, master of persuasion, Marshall Silver.
Good to see you, brother.
How are you?
Awesome, always.
Marshall's is the world's greatest hypnotist as well. So there's like a fine line between hypnosis and selling. What do you think line is?
I don't think there's a line.
Very same thing.
No, I think it's all the same thing.
Explain.
All buying decisions are based first on emotion and then back up with logic. Nobody needs a $450,000 automobile to get from point A to point B until you've ridden in one, and then you want it. And then you justify it. You come up with logical explanations of the reason you need it. Our subconscious mind is our emotional mind. Our conscious mind is our logical mind.
Wow, we think alike, boy.
Yeah, therefore, all buying decisions are based first subconsciously. Something goes off in our brain, and we say, I want that. Okay, yes, I deserve to have that. I can figure out a way to make this happen. And then we put it together. And like I said, we justify it logically.
The way I always phrase it, like the conscious mind is almost like the human bullshit detector to say, like, because let's say when I'm trying to close someone, you have to create the emotion lead because it's people buying emotion, but they justify it logic, as you said, right?
Yes.
We agree with that. And if you don't create the logical case, it's like the like bullshit. If you try to just hype them in just emotion. So what I do is you create both. It's magical.
You have to.
Yeah.
And I would go a little further and say it's not just a BS detector. It's the gatekeeper. Mm. So it's the thing that opens up and says, okay, I'm going to allow this information in. I'm going to agree that that's true, or I'm going to disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you know how to bypass that gatekeeper, go around the gatekeeper by any means, it's kind of like I might ask you, Jordan, you're a good guy. You've had a full life. Would you ever, in this incarnation of your life, would you ever steal from somebody?
No.
Imagine that you're starving. You don't have any money. Your kids are starving, and you know you need to feed them. And you pass by a hotel, and there's apples on the counter for the guests of the hotel. And you realize you're not really allowed to have them because you're not a guest of the hotel. Would you walk up and grab one?
I mean, in that context, yeah.
Yes. Would you ever kill somebody?
In the context they were trying to kill someone I loved in self-defense, I would.
Yes. Most people would answer they never would. So I don't need to create the sense that you would kill somebody. I need to create the context.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, you mentioned in your lecture yesterday, and you were brilliant, by the way. I want to put that out there on your podcast that you were brilliant.
Thank you.
And, you know, you were talking about the people that are kind of laydowns, the people that buy anything. And you said, I'm a sucker. And you said, who else is a sucker? And I put my hand up. And I was front row, and I don't know if anybody else in the room put their hand up.
A few, but yeah, it didn't surprise me. The greatest salesmen always are, right?
Well, yeah, because it's the context that those that are afraid to buy will telegraph that fear when they're selling.
Mm.
And so since all thoughts have a physical response, psychosomatic response in our body, if we're afraid to buy, if we always put up the hands and cross our arms when somebody's attempting to sell us something, we will telegraph that when we're selling.
You're a master of this stuff, obviously. Really, and I love the way you think. I think you even think more deeply about this than myself in some ways, because it's like what you do I think the talent you have with hypnosis, you must really understand the subconscious mind, right? And that's the emotional mind, correct?
Yes.
So here's my question. So I always say, here's how I look at it. I said, I want to create the airtight logical case, because once I do that, it frees the person up to be moved emotionally, right? Do you agree with that?
No, I think the opposite, actually.
Okay, yeah, tell me.
I think that what you've got to do, number one, you got to gain rapport.
Mm-hmm.
Once you gain rapport, you've got to elicit their outcome. You got to figure out what it is that they want, whatever that is.
Through intelligence, guiding questions.
Yeah,
right, yeah, okay.
Through prospecting and eliciting outcome. Once you know what they want, you have to frame what you're selling to look like what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a salesperson, I don't ask, I tell. You were talking about authority yesterday. Yes, you must be the authority.
Right.
And authorities, we don't ask, we tell.
Right. Yeah.
I guess we've covered just about everything. The only thing left remaining is to help you get what you want. Let's sit down and take care of the paperwork. Here, sign right here.
You know, I always say it's like you want to be like the physician. Say, here's what you need to do.
Yes.
I've asked you questions. You've told me your problem. Here's the solution. Here's the prescription, so to speak. And when you have that type of authority, people listen.
They do.
Now, they still might have objections and questions, but the point is, in the absence of that, you're not getting anywhere, really.
No. You're the authority, and authorities don't ask, we tell. If I'm a patient, good analogy, and the doctor says, here, I want you to take this prescription, a smart patient would say, what are the side effects? Mm-hmm. What are the downsides to taking this particular medication? Most people don't do that, though. They just do exactly what their doctor tells them to do because they've been trained that way their whole life.
Right.
You know, the first hypnotists we encounter are our parents, our authority figures. And that's the reason most people are screwed up, by the way, is that they were programmed by people that were fairly messed up themselves, and all they did was followed suit.
Let me just tell you a story here that you're going to really appreciate. And I always say to myself, I say, when I was a year old, sitting in the high chair, my mom is spoon feeding me applesauce. And she's saying, the only noble way to be wealthy, you got to be a doctor, mm-hmm. a dentist. It's freaking hypnosis. Yep. Doctor. You know what? I actually spent one day in dental school and dropped it. That's how strong the hypnosis
was. Did you know that
dentists
have the highest
suicide rate?
Suicide rate, yeah.
I know. And I'll tell you, if you stick your hand in people's mouths, why not jump out the window, right? Yep. But I actually went to dental school because I wanted to be rich, mm-hmm. and I equated wealth and respect with being a physician or a dentist, right? And when I got into the orientation, day one, the dean stands up, says, welcome, there's like 100 kids in the audience, welcome to the Baltimore College of Dental Surgery. You're proud to be here. Dentistry's amazing. You're going to have a great career. Everyone goes, bravo, give yourself a reverence. Yeah, we clap. And he goes, but let me just say one thing. The golden age of dentistry is over. If you're here to make a lot of money, you're probably in the wrong place. Like, what the fuck? I got up and I walked out and dropped out the first day.
Get it.
And the hypnosis was broken, right? Right, a quick word from one of my favorite sponsors of all, Blue Chew, the people who makes men's dicks harder, longer, fatter, and last longer. That's the bottom line. Let's just say what it is, right? This is your classic FDA-approved world-class erection pill, but unlike the original, the older stuff, right, that you know about, right, that Sildenafil, Tadalafil, whatever it's called, right, this does not have to be taken on an empty stomach. It hits you right away, all right? So it's not that awkward thing with, you know, oh, honey, let me have sex. I got to wait till I'm on an empty stomach. No, have sex whenever you want. It makes your stuff rock hard. And you could teach someone a lesson with this stuff. You show them what a great lover you are. I'm serious. It's awesome. Comes to your house in nondescript packaging, so there's nothing to be embarrassed about. You're going to speak to a doctor who will prescribe it to you. So it's a U.S. doctor coming from a U.S. pharmacy. You get it? And as I always say, what's my metaphor for today? Your dick will be so hard. How about this? The DEA, go back to my one. The DEA could use it as a battering ram to knock down a crack house door. That's how hard this will make you, okay? You got to give it a shot. They also have the short acting, you know, which is like the one day. It hits you for a few hours. It only lasts 2 or 3 days. Sex for the whole weekend. This stuff is awesome, all right? Guess what the price is? Free. They'll let you try it for free the first time. So again, here's the deal. BlueChew.com. Get your first order free by using the promo code WOLF. They believe in this podcast. They give it to you for free. All right? $5 shipping and handling. That's it. BlueChew.com. Promo code WOLF. Very quick, a word from our sponsor here, Raycon Earbuds. Listen, this company, Raycon, makes the most awesome pair of earbuds. Bluetooth, feel great in your ears, look great. They're like space age, right? They have incredible bass and they sound great. Seamless connection with your Bluetooth. So I just got to tell you, they are half the price of competitors, but the quality is, I think, at least as good or better than them. That's what Raycon's all about. And just for me, just, you know, I love listening to music with earbuds on, but 99% of the brands out there, they hurt my ears. They're not comfortable. These are so comfortable. Just put them in. It's like fits like a glove. They pair almost automatically. Just open the thing up and it pairs with your phone. It's ridiculous. And again, the price is, I think, half of what it should be. Well, I mean, honestly, that's how well valued it is. It's just a great deal here. So let me give you the actual details here. Go get your Raycon earbuds. You get 15% off the latest model here, the E25, best one of all, E25, okay? 6 hours of playtime. Again, seamless Bluetooth connection, more bass. Design is gorgeous, all right? Go to Raycon.com. You're going to get 15% off your order by going /wolf. So it's Raycon.com/wolf. Get 15% off.
So I'm a high school dropout. I dropped out of high school in my senior year. My mother was working three jobs, killing herself, and I knew I needed to contribute heavily to the family. And I was offered a job for a 30-day period for $50,000 to manage a Halloween store. And the man that I was being mentored by actually is the man that reinvented Halloween. At any rate, I went to my counselor and I said, I'm dropping out of high school. He said, you can't drop out of high school. It will destroy your life. I said, I've been offered a job that's going to pay me $50,000 in 30 days. He said, without hesitation, are they hiring?
And so what job was it?
It was managing a Halloween shop. You know, Halloween used to be, when we were younger, that you would go rent a costume from a costume rental place, right. You know, and then take it back when you were done.
Sure.
The challenge with that model is they only do business 2 weeks out of the year. The 2 weeks right before Halloween. So the man that mentored me was a magician. He had a magic store, and I was working in the magic store. And he would set up a kiosk at the Sears store every single December to sell magic kits for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And he also had this costume shop that, again, sat dormant 50 weeks out of the year. And he had these very expensive masks, and he went to the buyer at Sears, and he said, hey, how would you like to carry these masks during Halloween? And the buyer said, I can't buy them from you because if they don't sell, we're stuck with them for the year. And so he had the insight. He said, your garden department shuts down the last day of September. May I use that space during the month of October?
Early pop-ups.
That's what it was. He was the one that founded that. He created
it. Wow.
And so I watched him in the course of a few years, 5 years, go from fairly broke to being worth $50 million. And what was so great for me at the time is he was my mentor. I was 14 when I started working for him. By the time he became worth $50 million, I was 18. And I saw him.
That was a lot of money back. That was like a $250 million probably.
It was a lot of money.
A lot of money.
It was
back.
A lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And because of that, though, I realized if he could do that, I could do that. And that we're all one idea away from $1 billion. And the thing is, you just got to keep throwing the noodle against the wall. You got to keep coming up with one new idea and keep throwing that noodle against the wall. So, you know, again, you and I have both had highs and lows and highs again and lows again and highs again. I've become unattached to either side. You know, I was born very poor. I've got 10 siblings. We had no running water, no electricity, no phone. Often we had little, sometimes no food.
Where were you born?
I was born in Michigan.
Okay.
And the first house we lived in got condemned. And we were living actually in a station wagon. And the local community realized we were going to die in the middle of a Michigan winter in a station wagon. And so they renovated a chicken coop. And the chicken coop had running water, had electricity. You know, we lived there for 4 years, no adverse side effects.
Clucking away.
Other than that,
can you get one of my people to cluck like a chicken today?
I can. I can see you're like excited.
We're
for
gonna
that.
I'm just dying to have. I want Travis to do something weird. I want Travis to think he's like a 6-year-old girl and do a ballet dance for us or something like that.
I was on Howard Stern show, and I hypnotized his driver actually to do some pretty crazy things.
Like what?
Can we say this? Is this
yes,
PG?
Say anything.
So
it's the Wolf of Wall.
Got it. There were two. I hypnotized him and two strippers.
Okay.
And every time I would touch any of their knees, they would have an orgasm. And so Stern's crazy. I mean, Stern's wild. And this was before he went on
satellite radio.
Satellite radio, yeah. So it was a little more conservative. But then when he went on satellite radio, I would go back to do the show, and he'd ask me to do, like, make them kiss each other. Make those two guys French kiss each other. And I go, no, it'll mess them up for life. I'm not doing that.
Can you make those two guys kiss each other?
I knew you were going to say that. one of them looks like they might want to do that. Maybe, I don't know.
Marcus is ready to run out the door. He's ready to run out the door. how much... Okay, let me take it on. What was your first big success? Like, what was your first idea? You say it's about ideas, and I agree with you 1,000%. You're always one idea, very right? What was the first one for you?
I was I'm watching infomercials in the mid-90s, mm-hmm. and there's this big guy, big teeth, what's his name?
Tony Robbins,
yeah. And he's got
this understatement.
He's got this infomercial called Personal Power.
Right.
And I'm watching the show, and I do a little research, and I come to find out he's doing $3 million in sales per month on that infomercial. Mm-hmm. There's another infomercial running simultaneously with Dionne Warwick called the Psychic Friends Network, right. Where you could call up a psychic, and for $2.99 a minute, you could ask, does he love me?
When she's doing $10 million?
They were doing $30 million a month, $1 million a day. And so what I realized is that there was a product halfway between personal development and this magic over here of the psychic network. And because I'm a hypnotist, you know, hypnosis is just influence. It's not magic. Mm-hmm. It's just a process that people respond to something because they want to respond to something. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody in their right mind would ever pick up a cigarette. So there's other reasons people would start smoking cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Nobody in their right mind would ever poison their body in any way. There's reasons people do things. And so I said there's a product halfway between the two. So I did an infomercial called Passion, Profit, and Power. And I shopped it around the nation. Couldn't get anybody to carry the show. Anybody that wanted to do the show for me and produce the show for me was going to give me a point. And I'm going, a point? It's my idea. It's my product.
Like Guthrie Rankin. That's like Guthrie Rankin. Yeah. They give you nothing.
Give nothing. And so, you know, I wanted to sell a product for about $100. And I'm going, I'm not going to do this for $1 a product. That's crazy. And so finally, as is the case mostly, I said, I'm going to do it myself. So I had 10 grand in a safety deposit box. And the reason it was in a safety deposit box is I owed a bunch of people money because I was shopping and not really working a whole lot of the time, except I had this idea. And so I went to a producer and I said, I want to produce this script. How much would you charge me? And he said, $50,000. I said, okay, I'll pay you 10 grand now. Then I'll pay you 10 grand at this point and so on and so forth. I'll pay you the final 10 grand when you're done. I said, but I want you to know I will not do a revenue share. I will not do that. He said, no, we don't want to do revenue share. We've been burned too many times. I said, when you see what I do, you're going to want to do a revenue share. So I don't want to do a revenue share with you. Just be sure. And so sure enough, one of the first things I had them film was me lecturing and closing from the platform. Well, that's my place. I'm one of the best platform closers in the world. And I don't say that to toot my own horn. If there's somebody better than me, I'll be your best student. And so they watched me close, and I'm in front of a room of 300 realtors, and I close on a $500 ticket, and they watch 290 of them leap out of their seats, race back to the back, and buy. And the guy's eyes got wide. He walks over to me, and he says, I know we said we weren't going to do a revenue share, but if that's what you do, I'll waive the other $40,000. Well, I'm glad he did. It was a, you know, Tom Sawyer close because I didn't have the other $40,000. And he said, you know, will you give me $1 a unit for the first 200,000 units? And I said, absolutely. And so we cut the show. And as they say, the rest is history. You know, I put 10 grand into the show. And in the first year, we did 120 million in sales.
Wow.
And it was because I knew that an infomercial wasn't competing against other infomercials. It was competing against all other programming. Mm-hmm. And so rather than just, you know, sell, I made it entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
I made it a show that if you didn't buy the first time you watched it,
you keep watching.
The next time it came on, you tell your friends, you got to see this thing. He's got people walking on broken glass and he's making women stiff and rigid and laying them across supports for their necks and their ankles and then standing on their stomachs. He's got people eating fire and breaking bricks with their bare hands. And we did all of that. And in the midst of all of that, I had three separate closes. And I know you can appreciate this. The first close was the purely emotional close. It was the close that you know you need this. You know you want this. You know you're aching to have this. You want this badly. And that was pretty much the close. The second close backed up that emotion with logic. Here's the math. Here's what you've lost. You've already invested money in other products at other times, and you haven't changed your life. I'd like to protect the investment you've made in all those other products. So that's the logic.
So essentially, this is the one that's going to make everything else work, basically.
Exactly. This will protect the investment you've already made, you know, because that's part of what goes through people's minds when they're looking at personal development. You know, I've already bought those CDs and those books and those videos, and I haven't really used them.
And I just, you know, I really think that sales is that skill.
Yes.
It's like the salt on food. It's like it makes everything else work better, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But then the last close that I did was what I call Spanky Spanky.
Let's see a Spanky Spanky.
And Spanky Spanky is, hey, if you're sitting here watching this infomercial right now and you've watched the entire program, you want this. Except the challenge is there's somebody sitting on the couch right beside you who's telling you this is all fake. This is a scam. Those testimonials are actors. They're not real. They don't want you to have a better life. In fact, they're holding you down. They're pulling you back. It's Spanky Spanky, or it might be something. Every single person that has picked up the phone right now and ordered this product will have an unfair advantage over you. You'll be left in the dust, and you'll never know why, because you didn't have the courage to take action now, which is a direct command.
Right.
It's not a suggestion. It's not a comment. Right. It's a direct command to take action now.
Right. And would you do a tonal switch there, and so you essentially take action now, right?
Yes.
Call it out.
When I do a lecture, I'll do the lecture, and the first thing I'll do is I'll say, take a clean sheet of paper. And the reason I want a clean sheet of paper, I don't know what the last speaker said. I don't know what the last note that person took was. The last speaker might have left the stage, and it might be their trademark to say, don't do crap, which is actually a directive to do crap.
Right. There's no negative command. Yeah,
command is a
directive. They drop out. Yeah, yes. Sure. They'll drop the don't.
And so I have them take a clean sheet of paper, and I say, in nice, big, bold block letters across the top of that sheet of paper, write down these words, take action now. Why? I want that staring them in the face for 90 minutes. And then we proceed. And I let them know that ultimately, there's three things we need to get anything we want in our lives. The first is self-mastery. We've got to take total control of our thoughts and emotions. Unless we learn how to do that, we will always be a victim. We will always be at the will of everything going on around us. It's not enough, though, to have a positive mental attitude. You know, there's a book that was highly successful. It's called The Secret. And not to knock the book or any of the people that were in the film or gave to the book. The secret is there's no secret. That's the secret.
We are on the same page of this.
Also. The secret, yeah. There's no secret.
I say, if you want to sit on your couch and imagine a bag of money hitting you on the head, the only thing that'll show up in your mailbox is not a check, but it's an eviction notice.
Yes.
Right? Your wife's banging a next door neighbor. They're towing away your car. You're like, where's my check? Where's my check? Yeah.
You got to take
action is the key.
Absolutely. It's kind of like somebody of faith, you know, the person that's on their knees and they're praying to God, God, please. And God's saying, I already gave you everything you need. Get off your butt. Go take an action. Do something now.
Mom, my thoughts on, I believe the law of attraction is real, though.
Yes.
But here's the way it works. The best metaphor for me is like, remember third grade science teacher, horseshoe magnet, iron filings. He goes, watch, nothing happens. So he moves the magnet closer, nothing happens. Moves it closer, nothing happens. But if he gets close enough, it attracts. You have to move towards the things you want to attract. When you get close to them, then they attract.
And reality is created by validation.
There you go.
I have a company. It's called Certainty International.
Okay.
And whether you did it intentionally or whether it was just your language, you mentioned certainty quite a bit yesterday.
What's the essence of what I teach people is the transference of certainty.
It's everything.
Yeah,
that's what it is. It's everything. You know, whether you are a certain millionaire or a certain husband or a certain person or you live a certain life or you think in a certain way, certainty is the absence of doubt.
There you go.
And so when I program my kids or I hypnotized my wife to ask me out on a date when we first met, it's a matter of knowing as salespeople and people of certainty that we have a gift to give and that we are doing the other person a favor by giving them that gift.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we need is self-mastery. We must take total control of our thoughts and emotions. The second thing is we've got to know the proper tools for the task at hand. There's certain tools for relationship. Relationship, the number one tool in relationships is agreements. Mm-hmm. You've got to have agreements. The best tool in making money is influence. And I'm going to say it a little bit differently. I call it irresistible influence.
Mm-hmm.
Irresistible influence is communicating in such a way that the person you are influencing begs you for what you're selling. I got to have this, whatever the investment is, whatever the cost, you got to sell it to me. And more so, they believe it was their idea. They come to the conclusion. Mm-hmm. Look, I know you said you were sold out. Damn it, I'll do whatever I need to do. You're going to get me one of those things that sell for $1 million. And then the last thing, though, that makes me different is you can have all the self-mastery in the world. You can know the proper tools and the language patterns and all that stuff. The challenge is most people, I'd say almost everybody, is pretty screwed up. And it's not their fault. It's a matter that they had so much garbage, either consciously or
programming,
unconsciously
patterns,
put into their heads.
Self-defeating patterns.
Absolutely. You know, I had a father that was very mean. I'd call him on the phone, first words out of his mouth, you little SOB, why are you calling me? Last words out of his mouth, you little MF-er, don't ever call me again. And he didn't use acronyms. And so I grew up thinking I was a piece of crap. On the other hand, though, I had a mother that instilled all sorts of good stuff in me. Said, Marshall, you're going to grow up. You're going to do great things. You're going to be rich. You're going to be famous. Then you're going to take care of me. And so, you know, I knew what my father was saying on a subconscious level wasn't true.
Right.
I knew it was his pain.
Still has power, though.
It was his pain.
Yeah.
And it didn't make it hurt any less. I just knew it wasn't true.
Still has power. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I knew, though, that my mother loved me. Mm-hmm. And so I accepted what she told me. And my mother actually harmed me more than my father on a subconscious level because she gave me a program that seemed on its surface to be accurate, mm-hmm. which wasn't. She said, Marshall, work hard, get ahead.
Mm.
Well, you know, working hard gets you more hard work.
Yeah.
You finish a full day's worth of labor in a half a day, and your employer is going to give you another full day's worth of labor in the second half of the day. So what most
working
people do—
smart is better than working hard. Hard and smart, so to speak.
Well,
for yourself at least, right?
Those that think govern those that labor.
Right.
I've always been of the nature that if you give me a full day's worth of work that I can do in a half a day,
mm-hmm.
I'll do it in a half a day.
Right.
And if you give me another full day's worth of work on the second half of the day, I'll do it in the second half of the day. And the reason I'll do it, I'll come back to you and go, look, I'm twice as productive as of anybody else around here. I'd like a raise. And you might say, well, I can't double your pay, but I can certainly increase it 50%. Okay. If I'm going to be here, I want to maximize while I'm here. And most people are trained to do as little as they possibly need to do to maintain their position.
Right.
So if you're working, if you're watching this or listening to this podcast and you work for somebody else, hear what I said directly. Don't do as little as you can. Do more than you're paid for. the practice of doing more than we're paid for, what happens is our excellence rises.
Oh, of course.
And if we do more than we're paid for when we're in someone else's employ, we'll do more than we're paid for when we own the company, and that will attract more customers, which will make us wealthy.
Let's go back to something you said that really intrigued me, this irresistible influence, right? So how do you accomplish that? Can you give me just an example to the people here of how you would create irresistible influence so someone beg you for something that they didn't start off really wanting that badly. So let's obviously, if they really do want it, that's easy. What if they don't? What's the process to create that need, that emotional? Do you have a system that you teach for this?
Yes.
Okay, so could you just, I don't want you to give the whole thing.
I can give you the headlines.
Right, perfect.
So headline number one is gain rapport. You've got to have rapport with them. They've got to identify with you.
Right.
You know, we laughing.
We spoke about that yesterday, and when I gave my talk yesterday.
Yes, absolutely. Right. No, again, you're a master. We just have different language about, different semantics.
Exactly, it's identical. Yeah.
Well, we were talking last night of how well Leo portrayed you. And the little mannerisms and stuff. And I was going, holy crap. Because I didn't know you before yesterday.
He's good.
He was really good. And then somebody asked, you know, how much time did he spend with you? And you said a full year.
Oh, yeah.
He was you.
He was really dedicated, I tell you.
It was brilliant. And
I don't think people know that about Leo, by the way. It's like he's a natural, but he really works. Like, he's like, he doesn't take chances. He really tortured himself.
Clearly did.
Yeah.
He clearly did. So rapport, number one element of rapport is you've got to have a genuine love for people. You have to. The core of you as a person of influence, you've got to be doing what you do out of a moral and ethical circumstance. When you believe in what you're selling, you have a moral and ethical obligation to sell it. So if you don't believe in what you're selling, you have a moral and ethical obligation to stop selling it. And so the first thing is to, number one, have a high level of empathy.
Okay.
Put yourself in their shoes. When you have that high level of empathy, what happens is you know what they want to hear. You know what they need to hear. You know, again, I came out of retirement. I've got three kids. I've got an 8-year-old son, a 6-year-old son, and a 4-year-old daughter. I retired because I ticked off everything on my bucket list.
Right.
I'd been married twice before my one true wife. My wife is the most perfect human being in the world. I love this woman. We've been together almost 13 years. I've got three beautiful babies. I've, you know, got every car I've ever wanted. I have multiple homes. It's like, what else do I want?
Right.
And when my daughter was born, I felt a different sense in me. When my son was born, I said, I'm going to retire and spend all my life, you know, with my son and my wife. And my babies were all born, by the way, at home, in the bathtub, via hypnosis. No drugs, no doctors, no pain.
Now, you filmed it. I think, didn't you do a live stream?
We streamed my daughter's birth. We streamed my daughter's birth because my wife wanted.
We're going to insert the stream right here on this podcast for a second. I want to just, is it, we can insert it? Is it?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, great. Yeah, okay, yeah, so we'll insert it now.
Search Prosperity's Birth. Possibility in a different reality and realize that, you know, maybe a lot of the things that we believe in our life about birthing children, about relationships, about making money, about health and curing disease, maybe a lot of it's false hypnosis. And maybe there are some new beliefs that we could hold. I personally believe that there's enough abundance for everyone to eat, that we need to eliminate war. This isn't a political comment at an emotional moment. It's a means of protecting my children. It's a means of me wanting this baby girl to be in a safer world than the one that you've lived in, that I've lived in, and that we are living in today. And I believe that we can do it. We can do it together.
We're doing this to empower women and empower families that, and I want to clarify, not all pregnancies can do home births. I'm specifically talking about low-risk pregnancies where it's safe to do so. If we change or inspire or empower one woman's life to do the same, then we did our job.
All right, great. So we'll just insert it.
Lovely.
Pretty amazing, huh?
It's awesome stuff.
Okay.
So when my second son was born, I caught him in my hands and I looked into his eyes and I said, I just want to retire. I just want to spend all my time with my sons and my wife. And then when my daughter was born, I looked into her eyes and I said to myself, little girls are really expensive. I need to get back to work. And I didn't know what I wanted to do because I didn't want to go back to what I was doing. You know, flying around the country, flying around the world, doing seminars and lectures, and then flying home because I missed my family. I also knew that it wasn't scalable. That it wasn't saleable, that if I stopped doing it, it was done. And so I came up with this idea of Certainty. Certainty International is the name of the company. And we've launched our first Certainty Center down in San Diego. And it's a place of both entertainment and of education. So on Friday and Saturday nights, there's a show of certainty. It's the hypnotic show, Semantics Remixed. And the performer comes out and says, we're going to use language patterns that are so profound, they will cause people to do the wildest things. And then they do the show. And at the end of the show, the performer says, hey, if you loved what you saw, and I know that you did, on Tuesday night, come on back to this very theater, and we'll teach you how we did everything that we did and show you how to apply it in your life for better relationships, more money, emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual well-being. And there's another show that we're putting in as a matinee on Saturday and Sunday, and it's called Kid Show. And it's a magic show by kids, my kids, 8 and 6, for kids of all ages. So it's a grand illusion show. It's a big show. So
you're a magician, right?
I was a magician as
Me
a kid.
Me too.
Yeah, I loved it.
I gave magic parties from the age of 12 to 15.
Yes, and what I love about magic is magic makes you have empathy because you have to view things from the other person's point of view.
Sure.
You've got to be able to understand what their perception is. So the kids will do this grand magic show, this illusion show, and at the end of it, they'll come forward and they'll say, hey, if you love the magic show, and I know that you did, on Wednesday afternoon after you get out of school, we have a course called the Young Entrepreneur Society, where we'll teach you, you don't have to wait to be an adult to have your own business. You can have your own business now, and we'll show you how to pay for it. And what this was born from is that, you know, growing up dirt poor, I didn't have anybody give me anything. Anything I got, I earned myself. And my kids are different. My boys are in, you know, coding and singing and dance and karate. And one day my wife came back home and she said, the boys have been invited to Black Belt Club. And I said, that's awesome. What's Black Belt Club? She said, it's a 2-year program. They go to class 4 days a week. And I looked at her and I went, well, that's really clever marketing. That's really good. Daddy's going to pay for it.
My friend invented that in 1989, by the
it's
way.
It's clever.
Black Belt Club, the Junery in D.C.
It's really clever. But I thought, how great would it be if your kid came home and said, hey, mom, hey, dad, I've been invited to entrepreneur school. You don't have to pay a dime. In fact, the school's going to teach me how to pay for Black Belt Club. Every parent in the city is going to send their kid to that class.
Right.
Every parent sitting watching that show with their kids is going to say, you're coming back on Wednesday.
So how long ago did you open the Certainty International?
Certainty International has been around for a year and a half.
Okay.
We've been doing programs. We have 10, and this was fascinating to me too. We have literally 10 levels of certainty. 10 levels of certainty, 10 levels of classes.
So because I have 1 to 10 on the certainty.
That's what you were talking about. I wrote it in my notes. I circled it. I went, oh my God, we think exactly alike. And so what we do is we offer up classes. The first course is called Turning Point. And what Turning Point is, it does 3 things. Number one, it turns up your hunger. It turns up your wantingness. Because what causes people to become complacent is they settle. Mm-hmm. They just say, you know, enough's enough. I don't really care about cars anymore. I don't care about having a big house. I don't care about anything else. You know, a lot of times people don't. You know, once you have all those things, you go, not a big deal. And that was where I'd reached. You know, I've got the love of my life. I've got my kids are awesome. That's the Buddhist curse, though. Mm. May all of your greatest desires be instantaneously fulfilled. Mm. So when I decided to come out of retirement, I said, I've got to do something that's a legacy builder. Mm-hmm. I've got to do something that's a world changer. You know, how amazing would our planet be when every one of us is personally responsible for ourselves? Where in Ayn Rand's book, The Virtues of Selfishness, where she talks about the fact that I owe you exactly what you owe me, nothing. Mm. That if we take care of ourselves and we all do it at once, it's kind of like being on the freeway here in Southern California.
Self-reliance.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. Get it.
We're bumper to bumper on the freeway, and there's no reason we're bumper to bumper. Some morons in the
everyone
front.
Everyone just can't.
Right. And I often wonder what it would be like if there were megaphones alongside the freeway and some commanding authority voice came on and said,
go!
All right, everybody, on the count of three, have certainty. Press that pedal. 1, 2, 3, and we're all off. And that's the economy. You know, that's velocity as the economy is concerned.
Right, right, right.
You spend money with me, I spend money with him, he spends money with her.
The multiplier.
Everybody
effect.
Wins.
Sure. So let's go back now for a second. So we had rapport.
So you gain rapport. Second, you must elicit outcome. You've got to figure out what it is they want. Somebody, a person looking for a home is different than a person looking for a house.
You know, the steps are exactly like my, it's the funniest thing, different language.
Semantics.
It's hysterical, by the way, because, you know, it's a take control, you know, position yourself as an expert, get into rapport, gather intelligence.
Yep. So once you've elicited their outcome, the reason you do that is for framing. Mm-hmm. You've got to make what you're selling look like what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So you use their semantics, mm-hmm. you use their descriptions, mm-hmm. you use their pain points and their mm-hmm. pleasure points.
Sure.
And then the third thing you do is you give a directive. Like I said, like we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, you don't ask, so what do you think?
Here's the prescription.
I had somebody, they're working on selling a program to me, and I'm likely to invest in it because I want to see their process. The guy's had three conversations with me. It's a $20,000 price point, not that big in my world, yet it's a big price point. And the last email I got from him, from the salesperson, was, so I haven't heard from you, so I'm guessing you don't want this. If you change your mind, let me know. And I'm going, why would you ever say that? What would ever in the process give you cause to say that?
Took my book out here just to give you an idea how much we think of life. I said, moving from the main body to the close, right? That's number 6-7. Then you directly ask for the order with no beating around the bush. The reason I'm highing this, okay, is that the years of training sales forces all around the world, I found the vast majority of sales forces don't ask for the order very much. Either they dance around it, they leave it open-ended, as if they're hoping the prospect just come right out and say they want to buy it. Point of fact,
you're right.
Unbelievable, right?
Well, in addition to that, one of the things, when I'm on a stage and I come out, I ask the audience what I call say yes questions, because ultimately we want to put them in a yes state. We want to be the person that's fun to say yes to. And so I'll walk out and I'll say, who here wants more money? Well, that's an easy question to answer yes to.
Right.
Yes, they all put their hands up. I say, who here wants to lose a pound or two? Put your hand up. Most of the population puts their hand up, says, oh yeah. And if they don't put their hand up, I say, yeah, right. If you're having a hard time getting that heavy sucker up, have the person beside you help you lift it in the air. And then I'll say, who here would like to become a non-smoker? And then the final question I ask, though, is who here believes this morning I may try to sell you something? Everybody puts their hand up and says, oh, yeah. And I smile and I nod my head and I say, I will not let you down. And actually, I'm not going to try to sell you anything. I'm going to sell you something. It's good for me. It's good for you. It's good for the entire economy. Everybody wins. And so most salespeople, they attempt to be covert. And I say that's the wrong approach. Be just the opposite.
100%.
Somebody says, oh, you're just trying to sell me something. Well, of course I am. It's good for me. It's good for you. It's good for the entire economy. Everybody wins. It's what I do. I sell this thing that I sell.
So let me ask you a question. So I always tell the story of how I invented the system. I told it to you yesterday. You were in the audience, right? It was out of necessity. I had guys that couldn't close, which forced me to come up with a new way. What was your impetus for this? How did you come about, like, because it's such a similar way that you teach as I do. So what was the genesis? How did it start?
I've been selling since I was 7 years old, out of necessity. When I was a kid, my brother was in Boy Scouts, and so we got Boys Life magazine. And in the back of Boys Life magazine, they would front you. This is what I used to call it, fronting. I guess it was consign you. Either seeds, like vegetable or fruit seeds, or Christmas cards. And so at Christmas time, I'd get a dozen.
I've done it.
I'd get a dozen boxes of Christmas cards because we're the same age. I get a dozen boxes of Christmas cards, and I would tie them up. And I'd wait for a day that it was raining,
right?
And I would tie them up inside of a garbage bag, and then I'd take another garbage bag and poke a hole in the bottom for my head and two for my arms, and I'd jump on my lime green Schwinn bicycle with a banana seat.
I had that too.
And I would bicycle to the neighbors, and if I didn't get wet enough by the time I got there, I'd go stand under their gutter to let the water soak my head. And then I'd knock on the door, Mrs. Wilson, I'm selling Christmas cards. And she'd say, oh, my God, Marshall, you got to get out of the rain. You're going to catch a death of cold. And I said, Mrs. Wilson, I'm not leaving until I sell every box of my Christmas cards. Will this be cash or check? And I would do a highly assumptive sale with her. And so all my life I've been doing that. And it's just that process. There's two more steps to the process, though.
Keep going.
And I want to make this clear because I may have gained rapport. I may have elicited their outcome and framed what I'm selling to look like what they want and been very specific about the directive. I guess we've covered just about everything. Mm-hmm. Let's help you get to that place that you've been looking to get to. Mm-hmm. If they resist you, and I don't call it objections mm-hmm. because I think that's a bad frame. Mm-hmm. I call it resist. If they resist you, a superstar salesperson's job is to play with resistance. Mm-hmm. They never take it personally. It's not about you. Get out of your head. It's about them. Mm-hmm. And what I tell people is get out of your head, get into their life. Mm-hmm. If they're giving you resistance, it doesn't mean no. Mm-hmm. It means I want more information. And so the next step is give them more information.
Could create more certainty.
Right. Present whatever it is you're presenting from another point of view, come in from a different direction.
Right.
If I'm programming an entire audience, some of them may be Macs, some of them may be PCs. Mm-hmm. And even though they're similar, I need to know what is the hardware and what is the software they're running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody, when I was a kid, my mother was evangelical, very religious. And she would oftentimes get mailings from people asking for money. We didn't have money. My mother, though, no matter what we didn't have, would always give to these churches. And Jim and Tammy Faye Baker sent her a letter, and they said, hey, Sister Sylvestrak, if you'll give us a dollar, it'll come back tenfold. So she'd give them a dollar, and then they'd send back this full-color brochure. And if you'll, you know, if you'll agree to give us $10 a month, God will bring it back to you a thousandfold. And she'd agree to give $10 a month, and then they'd send back this full-color book. And they'd say, hey, if you'll commit to $100 a month, God will have a special place for you in heaven. And when I would see these things, I'd become very resentful of it. I'd say, Mom, they're con artists.
Right.
And so she'd send her money off, and then when they fell, I went back to my mom. I said, see, they were con artists. She said, it doesn't matter what they were, Marshall. I was sending my money to God. That's what she felt. Years ago, I was on the Dr. Joy Brown show. She was had a TV show in New York. And they asked me to come back and cure 10 phobias in an hour. And so they brought me to a room, and there were 9 people in the room, and I cured all the phobias. One had a fear of snakes. One had a fear of cockroaches. One had a fear of being social, asking a girl out on a date. One had a fear of heights. And we cured all of their phobias.
We're using you don't do NLP. You're your own process.
Hypnosis is a pie. Certainty is a pie. And I hesitate to call it hypnosis anymore, because the research that I've been doing and the studies that I've been doing over the last 8 years have taken it so far beyond hypnosis. Hypnosis is a pie. One slice of that pie was a guy named Milton Erickson.
Mm-hmm.
And Grinder and Bandler studied Milton Erickson, mm-hmm, and used his full awareness process,
mm-hmm,
and made that into what people call NLP.
NLP, yeah.
But
I've studied it, yeah.
The pie is actually substantially bigger. It's everything. It's the matrix. And so,
essentially, how the brain,
it's how people respond,
processes information, how it makes sense of the world. Basically.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And so, they had me cure all these phobias. They had me prove them up. So, the person that was afraid of snakes, we brought a snake out, handed it to them.
So Bandler would teach a swish pad or a timeline regression.
All the above. All the above. Because what happens? Let's imagine I'm working with tools
in the toolbox for you, right?
I'm working with 9 people, and all 9 people have different software. And they all have different fears. And so I've got to be able to utilize all the tools in my tool belt till I can see that I've got an agreement from all 9 of those people.
Sure.
So I didn't. We cured them.
Can you explain?
I want to finish the story real quick.
Sure, yeah, sure.
Because this is the point of it.
Yeah.
They told me that I was going to cure 10 phobias. There were only 9 people in the room. And I assumed for the moment that they just didn't have a 10th person with a phobia. Turns out they did. The woman was agoraphobic. And agoraphobia means scared to leave the house.
Yeah.
Or go over bridges sometimes it shows, mm-hmm, up. And she was agoraphobic, and she hadn't left her house in like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to her house, and we've got the film crew there live with me, because I'm going to do it live. They're live. I knock on the door. The door opens up. First thing I notice, this woman has no arms. She just got no arms. And the second thing I notice is on every surface of the room, there are pictures of Jesus or the Mother Mary or crucifixes, all this religious insignia all over the place. And the first thing she says to me, and by the way, she opened the door with her foot, standing on one foot, she opened the door. First thing she says is, Dr. Silver, I'm so excited to have you here. I'm not a doctor, except that's the wrong time to argue. So I let it go. I notice everything. She said, I'm so glad to see you. I said, yes, God sent me. Oh, why? That's her language.
Paradigm.
That's
sure,
her. That's her reality.
Yeah, of course.
So we come in, and they wanted to get some B-roll footage. So they got some B-roll footage of her making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with her feet. She was a programmer, computer programmer of all things, and she typed on the keyboard by holding a pencil between her toes. It was remarkable. So at any rate, we got to the point where I am to do the process with her. There's nothing for me to do. All I've got to do is smack her on the head and say, "Be healed," and that's what I do. I entered her neuroses. I smacked her on the head. I said, God said, be healed. Oh, am I healed? Yes, let's go. I opened the door up. She says, okay. And we start walking down the street. She hasn't been out of her house in nearly 20 years. She's got tears running down her face. Oh my God, the neighborhood has changed. And we get in the limo, and Dr. Joy wanted to give her a treat, take her to a grocery store and do some grocery shopping for her. So we go to the grocery store, and I say on camera, Dr. Joy said you can buy as much as you want to buy. They only had a budget of $200. I figured I'd get that in for the world. So we're coming back, and we're in this big, huge, long stretch limousine, and the producer of the segment is sitting beside me, and he says, we need an ending. So how about we get back to the house? The two of you stand in the limousine up through the sunroof, and you guys wave at the camera and say, thanks, Dr. Joy. And I said, I don't think that's a great idea. And he says, why not? I said, I don't think it's a great idea. She's sitting right beside me. He's sitting on the other side. No, you guys should wave at the camera. I said, I don't think that's a great idea. We should come up with something different. And so we get out of the car. She gets out first. He gets out next. I smack him in the back of the head. I said, dude, she can't wave at the camera. She doesn't have any arms. And he goes, oh, my God. I said, how about I wave and she speaks? So we got a red-faced producer filming the segment. But it was beautiful. It was magic. And again, that's persuasion. That's influence. And, you know, I just said something there, entering their neuroses, that's the empathy.
Yeah. And we say about, you know, this, the idea in NLP, they call it pace, lead, you know, enter someone's world where they are.
Yes.
That's the first step to getting into rapport, right?
Yes.
Not enter someone's world where they aren't.
Right.
Right. That's, you know, like, I always use an example. My son is angry. The worst he can do is, what's wrong? You're going to be just as angry as them, but they just shut down, right?
Kind of. One of the things is to acknowledge the anger, because I wouldn't necessarily want to be angry and rise to that pattern.
But not, I guess, okay, yeah, correct. So in other words, I'm not going to go to my son, oh, what's wrong, Bussy? What's going on? Tell me what's the problem. I use the tonality and tonally enter their world where they are to understand that I feel their pain. I understand them. I'm with them. And then from there,
yes,
I will bring them to a different place.
Kind of like with my kids. You know, I've got an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old sons, and the 6-year-old drives the 8-year-old nuts sometimes. He just does. The 8-year-old
job of a 6-year-old.
The 8-year-old is so smart.
I did it to my brother.
Yeah, I have 4 brothers. I did it to my brothers, I'm sure. And so when he gets upset, what I'll ask him, first thing I'll tell him is, you do realize getting upset will never get you what you want, and it may get you what you don't want. So just know that to be true. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, what's going on? First thing I say is, are you hurt? So if they're crying, I say, are you hurt? Because if they're hurt, you have permission to cry. Go right ahead. Cry it out. Second thing, though, I'll say, and this is very fast, and it's a fast way to get out of arguments. It's a fast way to close a sale. Ask the simple question, what do you want? I don't want him. I understand what you don't want. You don't want him to bother you.
What do you want?
I want space. How much space? I'd like 10 feet. Okay. I want him in the other room. Okay. You got it. Are we good? And it's done. Same thing, you know, like with spouses. My wife and I, one of the first things I told her when we met, I don't do drama. Unlike TNT, I just don't do drama. If we have something between us that's not going well, first thing I'm going to say is, what do you want? If you cannot tell me what you want, it's not on me, it's on you. If you can tell me what you want, I may give you what you want. I may go, well, that's easy. If that's all, you just want more hugs, or you want me to be calmer, you want this or that. Mm-hmm. It may be that I cannot give you what you want. I'll do my best not to say no to you and put you in a no state. I'll say, I understand what you want, and I'm not able to do that, yet I'm able to do this with this compromise. Mm. It may be that you want something I'm just not able to give you now. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to give it to you now. Let me think about that in the future.
Okay.
So it doesn't close it down, yet it closes it out. That makes sense?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. How about do it a demonstration?
We could do that.
Can we do it? Lisa, you up for it? Come on, Lisa. I think
I'll tell you something. I don't give gifts to people that don't want them. And the only hesitation I have is your staff. If they were wanting to, I would love
Anybody
to.
Want to? Or you guys all...
That would be a no from all three of them.
Oh, my.
That would be a no from all three of them.
That's fine. All right. Pussies, all you, Jesus. Damn it. I swear to God.
Well, I'll tell you, that's the reason I stopped doing Howard Stern.
Where's Matt when you need him? Matt would be up for this in 2 seconds.
We'll come back and do the show again.
Yeah.
And we'll get somebody's permission.
I'm really, honestly, I'll tell you what intrigues me so much about you is that there's so much bullshit in this world, so many bullshit artists, and you're just simply the real deal. I can see it, especially someone that teaches sales like I do at a level, the highest level. Yeah. I can see, and I always say that there is no other system than the straight line.
There isn't.
There isn't, because you call it what you
want. It's semantics, yeah.
You call it, change the words, because there's only one, you know, I said, I was running straight line patterns, so to speak, before I even invented the straight line.
Yep.
Because the whole, you know, I remember.
Because you were unconsciously competent. And that was the whole thing you were describing yesterday, that you and who's the other person?
Yeah, it was Danny. Yeah.
You and Danny, you got it because you were unconsciously competent. What that means is you didn't know that you knew.
Yeah, of course you do without thinking about it. Right. It's unconscious.
It's your natural state.
Yeah.
So our job, you and me, our job when we're helping people become better salespeople is to make them unconsciously competent. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the first things that has to happen is, once again, salespeople rule the economy. We are the ones that make the economy good
nothing
or make it bad.
Until something gets sold, right?
Absolutely. There's no business unless something is sold. And so when you come from it in that point of view, you know, a lot of people give salespeople a bad rap. You know, they're just sleazy salespeople. Well, what does that mean? That's
nonsense.
That's oxymoronic.
Yeah.
And
you know, let me tell you a story real quick. So just exactly along those lines is that when I wrote my first book, it was published by Random House. And the publisher back then was this old, like, stodgy, great, really legend, Irwin Applebaum, right? He's like an Alfred Hitchcock type of guy, right? Really soft-spoken guy. You know, you'd think he was like just a bean counter type or a literary genius type. And I went for the meeting with him, and he goes, you know, because I want to just tell you one thing about books. No one buys a book. They get sold to them. I was like, Irwin Apple. I was like, even so, like, it's amazing. Yep. Even a stodgy guy in the book business, you wouldn't think. He says, people don't, but they get sold to them. It's really interesting. But then the other side, people hate to get sold to, they love to buy.
Yes.
So the point is, how do you position yourself so you're not perceived as that pushy salesperson?
Well, it's the thing. I don't like Girl Scout cookies. I've never eaten a Girl Scout cookie that I liked. I would never buy one to eat it. I'll buy Girl Scout cookies from a Girl Scout every single time they approach me to sell them. And the reason is I want to give that girl good self-esteem.
Right.
I want to reward their behavior. I want to contribute to their cause. My brother shows up at the house one day and he says, we're having a potluck with the family. And he says, he's got a big cardboard box in his hands. Where do you want your cream puffs? And I said, in the kitchen with the other food. Weird question to ask me. He says, okay. Comes back a minute later, he's got another box. And I'm not talking a little box. I'm talking about a cardboard carton. He says, where do you want these cream puffs? I said, in the kitchen with the food. He comes back with a third box like that. He says, where do you want this one? And I said, dude, why did you bring so many cream puffs? He said, they're your cream puffs. He said, there's nine more boxes in my car, actually. They're all yours. And I said, why in the world do I have 12 boxes of cream puffs? He said, you bought them. I said, why would I buy 12 boxes of cream puffs? He said, for your niece, my daughter. How did this happen? He said, you said, I told you she was having a contest, and whoever sold the most in the contest would win. And you said, you'll buy as many as you need to buy to make her win. I said, where were we when we were having this conversation? He said, in the wine cellar. I said, oh, man. But again, you said it yesterday. You said, I'm a sucker to buy. Yes, you're what's good in the economy. I'm a sucker to buy. I buy things because I know it's good for you. It's good for the entire economy. Everybody wins.
What do you think about people? Let me see. What advice would you give to someone that's watching this podcast that listens to what we say? We're in agreement on almost everything, right? And they agree, but they just can't get themselves off the mark. They're stuck in that pattern where they're just living a life of mediocrity and they're not burning bright. What would you say? Like, what's your approach to dealing with people that have just got, they almost become numb? You know, I say, the way I explain it is they go into denial of their own pain. After a while, like, you know, kind of hurts because you had these, you know, you're 21, you're 18, you're going to conquer the world. By the time you're 35, you're like, well, maybe I don't.
You got knocked down so many times, I don't want to get back up.
Right,
maybe
exactly.
Just settle.
What's your strategy? Because I know you've been really successful. You have. You just have been taking people that kind of have lost the spark, getting them back that spark, and giving them strategies to really succeed. What would you say to them?
The challenge is not what's on the outside. The challenge is what's on the inside. And like you said, you know, when we're 18, 19, 20, 21, we're going to conquer the world.
Right.
And then the world knocks us down so many times, we just say, I'm going to settle. Imagine this cup is filled with half Red Bull, half poison. And imagine that I don't drink it because it affects me. It gives me headaches. And so because it's poison, I won't drink it. I drink water. Somebody offers a pitcher of water. I pour the water into there and it fills up to the top. Now, while that poison is diluted slightly, it's still poison. And if I drink it, because of my nature, it'll give me bad headaches and I can't drink it. So I don't drink it. But if that person keeps pouring that pitcher of water and it starts to overflow and it flows out and more pure water pours into that thing, what happens is eventually it's completely gone. It's just pure water.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I say to that person that's been beat up, and I don't care if you're 8 or 80, that person that's been beat up, number one, has to find a source of purity, of water, has to find a source of goodness in their life. They've got to have a person, a community, a whatever it is, books, video. They've got to find someplace and they've got to keep that diet very specific. They've got to know themselves. And again, not everything affects everybody the same way. You like your Red Bull. For me, like if I have a sip of it, my head's just pounding.
Yeah.
the
well, I can't smoke coke anymore, so I replaced it with Red Bull.
Well, you know, it's more sustainable. I did cocaine in my youth too, and at 23 years old, my brain just said, I had a flash of my future son, and I said, I can't do this. I can't tell my son, do as daddy says, not as daddy does.
And
it was so strong for me. It was an epiphany that hit me.
I think I did like enough to do a ski jump off. I said, you know, when you get to that point, you got to stop.
You have to, or you'll die.
You're going to die. Right? Yeah.
And so whether it's reading great books and filling your head up with good information, whether it's watching podcasts like this, whether it's finding a certain community, you know, people you can hang out with that don't do cocaine, that have reasonable lives. You know, we're both speakers at an event that's filled with extremely successful people. And the vibration level in the room is amazing.
Yeah.
It's just astounding.
It is really. Yeah.
And so, you know, find those communities. You are the average of the people you hang out with. It's not a cliche. And if you know, don't think you have anything to contribute to that community, bear in mind there are some of us. You're of this nature. I'm of this nature that we want to pour into other people's lives.
Oh, yeah.
We want to give back. We've been blessed, massively blessed. And so there's a real joy. You said it. You said, it's not even the sale that gets me excited and giddy. It's that email that says, you changed my life. And I agree.
Yeah. No, it's an amazing. My mother used to say, you know, if you lie down with dogs, you wake up with fleas. The most true thing she ever said.
Yep.
You are the product of who you associate with. It's really true. So what you say, so what I think what you're saying is that number one, A, cut out the negative voices. You got to cut the negative
people. Get rid of the toxic relationships, even if you're related to them.
Exactly, right? Number two is seek out a mentor. And that person maybe is not someone you even met in person. It could be someone on video.
Could be a podcast.
Could be books, right? But you want to have that on a continued basis. It can't just be every once in a while.
It's got to be part of your diet.
So what I say is, you know what you say to salespeople in terms of just training them every once in a while, it matters. What you say to them every single day, day in and day out, that's what does the trick, especially in the absence of a competing negative message.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
We exactly. Do.
If I'm not pouring poison into the glass, if I'm pouring that pure water into the glass on a constant basis, and it's got to be constant, by the way, because if you don't pour more pure water into that glass, what happens is things settle in it anyway. Things from the environment, things from the area just settle in it. So it's got to be constant. You know, our kids, they were all born via hypnosis, as I mentioned, and some would say they were conceived via hypnosis, and I wouldn't argue with that. My kids, we constantly pour into their lives. We constantly remind them that they're geniuses. And the only distinction between a genius and a moron is they know who they are. I mean that. So let's imagine there's a circumstance in front of me and I believe I'm a moron. And you say, hey, solve this challenge. And I say, I'm a moron. How can I be expected to solve that? Oh, yuck, yuck, yuck. And I don't even attempt it. I just walk past it. But you put a circumstance in front of me I know nothing about and you say, solve that. Well, I'm a genius and I know nothing about that, yet I'm a genius. And I say, okay, I know nothing about that, yet I'm a genius. I'll solve that. And so my belief is that IQ level is all self-perception.
Mm-hmm.
It's all who we think we are.
Interesting.
You know, Apollo 13, the movie, they're up in outer space and they're attempting to get back to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the main engineer says, what do you have? We've got a cardboard tube. We've got some duct tape. We've got a plastic bag.
The carbon dioxide.
Yes.
They had to make a thing.
Yes.
I know.
And so he said,
I'm a movie.
He didn't say, what don't you have? He said, what do you have? And I think that's the biggest thing. We got to take inventory about what we do have.
Right.
And so he goes to his engineers on Earth. He said, all right, they've got a cardboard tube. They got some duct tape, which cures everything, by the way.
They got the
plastic cover. Get them back. And the engineers all say, we can't get them back. He said, I didn't ask you if you could get them back. I said, get them back using this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a lot like immigrants that come to this country that don't realize that they're not supposed to succeed at the highest levels. What they know is where they came from. Mm-hmm. What they know is what they didn't have there. And they see the abundance that we have here in the United States.
Yeah.
And they say, oh my gosh, this is a pot of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is they end up succeeding at amazing levels because they know what they have, not what they don't have. Since what we focus on expands and reality is created by validation, if you're hitting a rough spot, all you got to do is look at people that are succeeding. Do not resent them. Look at them. Hack their process. Say, what are they doing? I got to acknowledge this, Jordan, and it hit me really hard yesterday listening to you speak. When I saw the movie, Wolf of Wall Street, I kind of didn't like you. The movie was amazing. I loved the movie. I didn't like you. And the two things. Number one, your spirit yesterday cemented it, that your knowledge that maybe I made some big mistakes. And your willingness not only to acknowledge that, but the thing that I love even more, you're never going to be knocked down to a place where you won't stand back up. And once we've done something once, we can do it again, and we can do it again, and we can do it again. You know, I told you I did an infomercial in the mid-90s, and I made a lot of money. Moved to Vegas, and unfortunately, I wasn't wise with it. I was a whale there, and before I learned how to play and count cards and all that stuff, I ran through all the money. And I made millions again, and then I married the wrong person. Lost it all again. I made millions again. And
what are we like?
Yeah. And the economy changed. I was heavily leveraged in real estate and I lost most of it again. I was already in relationship with my wife and we had multiple properties. And she said, honey, sell everything. We don't need a 17,000 square foot home in Vegas. We don't need a house on the beach. Sell everything. We can live in an apartment for all I care. And I think everything happens for a reason. And finding our lives less than perfect is a waste of our time. So when I was going through those difficult times as our economy was sucking so bad in, you know, 2007, 8, 9, all the way through 16, I kept asking, what's the point in this? You know, what's the good thing here? And when she told me, sell everything, let's live in an apartment, I realized that's what it was for. Because now I have zero thought that my wife was ever a gold digger, which she never demonstrated. But she was willing to stay with me even if I was broke. She didn't care. And
it's an amazing feeling.
It is.
You know, I've been with a woman like that.
Being rich again now surely feels better. And money cures most things. It does. Except I realize I'm not attached to either side. That if I have nothing, I'm going to find joy. If I have a lot, I'm going to find joy and spread the joy.
Did you say, was it you who said, if you don't think money can buy happiness, you don't know how to spend it? Was that you or no?
No, what I said is, if you don't think money can buy love, you've never been to Vegas.
I always say, you know, money really can't buy happiness, but a lack of money is a passport to misery.
Yeah, and I don't agree. I think money can buy a lot of things that would make people happy.
Yeah,
you know, money gives you more choices. You don't have to worry about government health benefits. You don't have to worry about money makes you better looking. Trust me on this one.
I've been to Colombia. Trust me, to Medellin. Boy, the girls there, wow. The mothers have the girls doing plastic surgery at 15 years old there, and it works.
I didn't mean it that way.
let me give you.
People will tell you sing really good if you're rich.
Let me give you my take on this. Just my own life experience. I have been rich and miserable. I've been rich and really happy. I've been poor and miserable. I have never been poor and happy. That's just me. I can't. You know, some people, I guess. You know, and I think poor is it's. What's your currency is the question.
Yeah, I want to tell you a story. I fly in private jets. I do it because I think that the value of flying on a private jet is it's expensive, yet it saves you so much time.
Yeah.
And I have a pilot that I use often between Carlsbad, my home down in Southern California, and Las Vegas. And he's known me throughout the course of years. And he's seen me go through a fortune and lose it all and get it all back again. And one time when I had done that, I was flying from Carlsbad back to Vegas by myself, and I didn't want to sit in the back of the jet, so I sat up in the cockpit beside him. And he said, Marshall, I've got a couple customers that are like you that have had great fortunes and then lost all their money and then made great fortunes again. What do you feel and what do you think when you're broke? I said, I've never been broke. I've been between fortunes. And so I think that's the mindset. You know, Donald Trump is a good example. At one point, he was $1 billion in debt.
Yeah.
And he's walking down the street with his wife, and he points out the homeless guy, and he says, that homeless man is worth $1 billion more than I am right now. And the reason he said that was he was $1 billion in debt. That guy probably had no debt.
Right.
The thing is, you know, Donald Trump's a billionaire. Mm-hmm. You take a Donald Trump, you take a Richard Branson, you take an Elon Musk, people that have had millions and even billions of dollars and then lost it all and then gotten it all back. It's because they know who they are.
Right.
So the question I have for you watching this, listening to this is, who are you? Who were you on the day you were born? Were you a pauper trying to make money? Or were you a multimillionaire whose millions had not yet been deposited in your bank account? I guarantee you, you're a multimillionaire. It's who you are. And you got to view the world through a multimillionaire's eyes. A multimillionaire or billionaire wouldn't call up their cell phone company and argue about a $10 overcharge on their bill. They'd say, it's not worth my time. And if they were really irked about it, they'd just change carriers. A multimillionaire, multibillionaire tips well. We do. Why? It's prosperity consciousness. That person is working for you. If they gave you great service, double the bill. Tip them the bill or pay off their mortgage. Do something that can change their life forever. When you get used to throwing money into the universe like that, and I don't mean being foolish. I don't mean throwing the money away.
No, I understand. Paying for good service. Why not?
Absolutely.
Rewarding good service.
And it echoes back on you.
Yeah.
It comes right back to you. One time I was at a Denny's in Vegas, and I like to ask the waiter or the waitress, do you own your home or do you rent? So we're at Denny's and I asked the gal, she's giving great service. She said, very proud, I own my house. I said, what's your mortgage? This is many years ago. She said, my mortgage is $1,500 a month. Well, the check was like $20. And so I paid the check and I put $1,500 bills in there. And I start to walk out of the restaurant and she comes running out after me. She says, sir, you left all your money in the restaurant. I turned to her and I said, no, darling, I didn't leave all my money in the restaurant. And she said, well, you must have left all that you had. I said, what do you mean? She said, there's $1,520 here. I said, how much was the check? She said, $20. I said, how much was your mortgage? She smiled. She said, are you single? But that $1,500, not having that $1,500 didn't make any difference in my day. It made her entire month. And so that's the other thing, is that there's a point where, you know, you asked about this, where you have everything you want. And I think there's four steps to total enlightenment. Step number one is to forgive everybody, including ourselves. Forgive ourselves. I've mucked it up so many times. I muck it up on a daily basis. I make mistakes. I look back and I say, gosh, I wish I'd have done that differently. Oh boy, I wish I'd have shown up differently there. Let it go. Take a shower in the morning and wash off all the sin from yesterday. Start brand new today. Second thing is, after we forgive, we become present. We're not living in, you know, last night or a year ago or 10 years ago. We become present. So the second thing is to surrender and find our lives perfect. Again, finding it less than perfect is a waste of time. I know it's very zen. It is what it is. The third thing is, we have got to, and this is the big one, we have got to utilize the circumstances of our life rather than tolerate the circumstances of our life. Whatever comes up, whatever shows up, we got to say, okay, there's a reason this showed up in this way. The
essence saying making lemons at lemons.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Then the fourth step to total enlightenment, I believe, is to, because once you start utilizing versus tolerating things, you will have so much abundance, you won't know what to do with it. You'll have so much money, you'll have so much love, you'll have so much joy. The only thing left to do is to serve other people. And so that's what you're doing with this podcast. That's what you're doing on this reinvention of yourself again. That's what I'm doing on this reinvention of me, is I'm saying, how do I serve people? You know, I decided to launch Certainty International because I was afraid for my kids. I was afraid for all the insanity I've been watching around me, people inventing genders and saying, you owe me. And it's like, no, they won't help you. I want to help you. It won't help you. If you're a man and you want to dress like a woman, that's fine. Just say, I'm a man that dresses like a woman. Awesome. You don't get to go into the bathroom. And I know some people watching this might even take offense with me. And if I offend you in any way, tough crap. Get over it already, man.
Marshall, I couldn't agree with you more in all this stuff. I am like-minded about this stuff.
And so there's got to be somebody. It's not hard to hypnotize people. It's hard to bring them out of the hypnosis they put themselves in. Mm. And so whatever hypnosis you want to live in, all I got to ask you, how's it working for you? Is your life joyful? If you're happy every single day, awesome. If you are not impeding on other people's lives, awesome. God bless you. Do whatever you want to do. And you have complete freedom. And I recommend you do that.
Right.
Yet if what you're doing is causing pain to other people, if what you're doing, there's a story about a woman in Texas recently that wanted to
change the gender
of her son.
Holy
7 years old.
Christ. I mean, what the? What the?
If I don't say something and nobody says something, that poor soul is affected for life.
Well, I think the judge intervened, right? They stopped it.
Yes.
Thank God.
But again, there's so many things like that, and that's hypnosis. If you let madness go on.
Can you imagine that this mother was going to change the gender of a 7-year-old?
It wasn't her biological child.
It's baffling.
It's child abuse.
It's just baffling.
And again, you know, it's the thing, though, that so many people are afraid to say, Emperor, you have no clothes on. I know nobody else will tell you, because they all say only an idiot can't see your clothes. You have no clothes on. And if I'm wrong, so be it, except you have no clothes on.
All right. Listen, here's what we're going to do. I want to keep going here, but this is going to end the video portion of the podcast. I want Marshall to tell a story.
I got a gift for your viewers before we wrap up this.
No, we're not wrapping up.
Okay.
No.
Good.
No, we're not wrapping up. We're going to go now to audio only. Okay, so we keep going, and I'm going to want Marshall to do two things. Number one, give a gift. Let's give the gift now first.
That's what I figured. Well, while you're watching
first,
the video,
yeah.
You know, I've been on stage for 50 years. This is my 50th year on stage. I've been on stage since I was 7, and I've been teaching educational programs, business and personal development programs, for 34 years. 34 years ago, I created a program called Turning Point, and I talked about it a bit earlier.
Yeah.
It does three things, and I only told you one. The first thing it does is it turns up your wantingness. It makes you hungry again, which brings back your motivation and your mojo. Second thing it does is it teaches you how to get in your brain and identify which programs are working against you, which beliefs, which truths, which realities you created that don't serve you. and how to change those into ones that do. The third thing it does, and this is essential, is it teaches you how to communicate to other people in such a way that they want to give you what you want. Here's the gift. The program is a 2.5-day live event. I teach it all over the country, sometimes in other countries as well. For the first 10 people who contact my office at 1-800-92-POWER and say, "The Wolf sent me," I'm going to give you that $3,000 ticket for you and a guest totally free. No obligation to buy anything, totally free.
Put the link up right now. How about the first 15?
You can do that.
Let's
I'm
do 15, because I know you're going to get 10 people going to call. Let's do 15.
And by the way, should you watch this at a time after it was already run, don't think for a moment that they're all gone. Have faith. Be certain. And I tell people that because sometimes, you know, people will see something and they'll say it's too good to be true. No, it's just better than you've ever experienced.
Guys, let me tell you something, all right? He is the real deal. He just is, all right? Just trust me. This is the real deal. You guys know that when it comes to influence and persuasion, you know what I can teach.
You're a master.
This is the real deal. So I would, don't look a gift horse in the mouth, as they say. And with that, we're going to keep going here because I'm going to want Marsha to tell me the craziest hypnosis. I want you to just tell me one crazy story that'll make everyone laugh, because I know you probably have some real crazy ones, right? We're going to switch to the audio portion now. Share this podcast with your friends. Tune in now to Spotify, iTunes, wherever you watch a podcast. Marshall, you're amazing. Let's keep going. Tell us what's the craziest thing that you've ever been instigated with your hypnosis where that it's funny, empowering, and awesome. Come on,
Well, I'll tell you a couple quick ones. The first one was what got me into hypnosis. I got hypnotized when I was 16 years old at my high school. And the hypnotist gave me a suggestion. He said, when you hear the words "sunny boy," you'll stand up from your seat in the audience. You'll walk back to the stage. You'll fall on your butt. You'll roll your pant legs up above your knees. You'll climb on my lap, meaning the hypnotist's lap. You'll put your thumb in your mouth and you'll say, "Sing it again, Daddy." And I remember going back to my seat thinking, there's no way I'm going to do this. I mean, I'm an introvert already. I'm wearing my sister's hand-me-down clothes to school. We're the poor family in the community, and I'm embarrassed. And so he sends me back to my seat, and he says, "Sonny boy." And I stand up, and I'm walking back to the stage. And the whole time I'm walking back, I'm thinking, I don't have to do this. Except I find myself doing it anyway. On my butt, pant legs up, on his lap, thumb in mouth. "Sing it again, Daddy." I went home that night, Jordan, and I thought to myself, was I actually hypnotized or was I just doing what he told me to do? And I thought, well, what if he had told you to be confident and you just did it because he told you to? What if he had told you to get off drugs and you just did it because he told you to? What if he had told me to go out and be a multi-millionaire? And because he told me I could, I was certain I would. And if I went out and took those fearless actions, it would change my life. Well, if that was hypnosis, then that is the most profound power on the planet, which it is. And the...
How does that work, though? Because I studied it with NLP and I didn't get it. I honestly did not. I did not get it.
Here is the challenge with NLP.
Didn't work. I didn't think it...
Yeah. Here's the challenge with it. It's a slice of the pie. Mm. And so if I only have a couple of berries of the pie and I don't have the pie crust, I'm not really eating pie. I'm eating berries.
It has uses, NLP, but just, I mean, with hypnosis, I didn't...
Yes. What it is the challenge with NLP is Grinder and Bandler decided to commercialize a process that was a natural process. In order to sell something, they had to show content. The person that they studied, Milton Erickson, he was a natural. Mm-hmm. And a natural doesn't have to think about what they do. They just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Erickson was
unconsciously competent.
That's what he was. He was extremely empathetic. He would look at somebody and he would know what they needed and how they needed that communicated to them. The thing about NLP is Grinder and Bandler sought to commercialize it. So they did a bunch of things that weren't actually real. It's kind of like I pick up a book on hypnosis and I look at it and most of it just isn't real. It's not true. They just wrote a book. You see a lot of stuff inside of persuasion and influence, and you read it and you say, this would never work in the real world. Nobody's going to respond to this way. Same thing with me. So the second story in hypnosis, I'm 17 years old. And because it was so profound, I decided to pick up a book and study it. I had been best friends with this girl for like 3 years, and I wanted her to be my girlfriend, except we were best friends. And so every time she'd break up with the current boyfriend, I'd think, oh, I got a shot now. Then she'd get a new boyfriend that wasn't me. And so she was my first hypnotic subject. I hypnotized her, and she was amazingly responsive. And after I brought her out of trance, she wouldn't leave me alone. I mean, she's physically all over me. Oh, we should go out. Let's go hang out. And she wouldn't leave me alone. And I said, this is what I'm going to do for a living. This is what I'm going to do. I like
every guy right now is like, I want to learn this technique.
So I want to go fast forward. So I'd been a hypnotist for many, many years. I'd been married twice to two women that I wasn't supposed to be married to. And I'm doing a seminar in Boston. And there is a 1,000 people in the room. And I'm walking up the center aisle. And on the fourth row, center seat, is the most beautiful young woman I have ever seen. And not just beautiful, sexy, beautiful, just everything about her beautiful. And I looked at her and I smiled. And I get up on stage and I think to myself, I'm going to hypnotize this woman to ask me out on a date. And so first thing you got to do is you got to qualify your prospects. So I said, who here is single and would love to have a passionate, healthy relationship? And while I'm asking the question, I'm pointing at myself, looking her right in the eyes. And she doesn't put her hand up. So it tells me she's not single. And I said, I'm not done, though. I'm playing with resistance. I said, who here is in a relationship and wants more passion in that relationship? And I shake my head back and forth like this. And I look directly at her. She doesn't put her hand up, and she looks away from me. At Turning Point, I'm going to teach you something called cold reading. Cold reading is the ability to read people's body language and know what they're thinking. So I'm reading her body language. It tells me she's in a relationship. She's not happy. I say game on. So I'm teaching 1,000 people in the room about the topic of reprogramming their brain. And I'm walking out into the audience and I walk near her and I'm standing right beside her. Imagine you're her. And I'm right beside her. And I say, you know, often in life, what you want is so close. You could almost reach out and touch it with your hand. And I kid you not, she's sitting there. She's looking at my hand and she goes like this, starts to reach out and touch it. The room has a laugh. And I keep programming her in that way. You know, what you want is right in front of you. All you have to do is ask for it. So when I go on break, I tell the whole audience, I say, when I go on break, I'm on break too. There may be one of you in this room that knows you must ask me that question. And I look her right in the eyes. I say, you have permission. And I nod my head up and down. So everybody stands up, including her. She starts to walk away. And she shrugs her shoulder, turns around, shrugs again, turns back, starts to walk away. And then she throws her hands up in the air, turns around, walks all the way back up to the stage where I'm seated on a stool. And she says, I know you don't like to be bothered on your break. And this really isn't like me. And I don't even know why I'm doing this. And I'm thinking to myself, I do. And she says, if you're staying in this hotel and you'd like to, you know, grab a cup of coffee after the seminar, I'd love to grab a cup of coffee with you. I said, if staying in this hotel is a prerequisite, I will have my staff move me. I said, I already have dinner plans, which I did. I had flown a woman in from New York to spend the weekend with me. So I had dinner plans. And I said, but after dinner, I'll give you a call and we'll figure out how to get together. And she said, sure. She gives me her cell phone number. I went to dinner with this woman and I said, I apologize. You may not think this is the right thing to do now. I know it's the right thing to do. I couldn't in good conscience spend the weekend with you. Something has come up. I said, I can either put you up in another hotel room or I can fly you back home on the jet, whatever you need. And she wasn't happy with me, except I knew I was doing the polite and correct thing. And then I called up my wife, Erica, and I said, if we go down to the lounge or to the cafe, there's 1,000 people here. We will be, I'll be mobbed and we won't get any privacy. Would you feel comfortable coming to my suite? How smooth is that? How good is that? She said, sure, why not? And she said, I'll be there in 10 minutes. And so she hangs up the phone and, she asked me before she hangs up the phone. She says,
Stop. So this, okay, it became your wife.
She became my wife.
Oh, because you didn't say Erica. You said my wife, Erica.
Yes. This is my wife.
Okay.
Before she hangs up, I said, would you mind coming to my suite? She said, yeah, that'd be fine. What should I do? I said, what room are you in? She tells me her room and it's like 1402. Well, I'm in 1401. Which means it's the room directly across the hall, not down the hall, not on another floor, directly across the hall. That's God working in your life. And so she says, okay, I'll be over there in 10 minutes. And so I hang up the phone and all of a sudden I hear screaming going on in the hallway. I'm going, what? Open the door. There's nobody there. It turns out it's not screaming in the hallway. It's screaming coming from her room.
It's the girl screaming?
She's going, oh my God. Oh my God. What should I do? He invited me to his room. And she sounds just like that too. And the woman that brought her as a guest, because she didn't know me from Adam. The woman that brought her as a guest said, you need to go to his room. You're going to marry that man.
Wow.
10 minutes later, knock on the door. I open the door. I don't say a word to her. I take her by the hand. I pull her close, and I give her a kiss. And she collapses in my arms, literally collapses. And I stand her back up. And I say, come on in. Sit down. Tell me about your boyfriend. Turns out she's in a relationship. She's extremely unhappy. She's living with a guy that's stoned all day long, doesn't do any work, just watches TV, doesn't give her any physical attention, and she just doesn't know how to get out. She's working 3 jobs, going to school, trying to make her life better. And so we talked, and a month later, I said, look, I'll move you out into an apartment. I'll pay for it for 3 months. Know that after 3 months, whether we're together or not, I'm not committing to paying for it after that. I just want you to help you get on your feet. And then 2 weeks after that, she flew out to Vegas to visit me in Vegas and never, literally never went home. cool is that? So that's a good story of hypnosis.
What a story.
Yeah.
Wow.
The money's been great. I mean, I'll tell you one more story because it's kind of fun.
That was great.
So when I first moved to Vegas back in 1994, I got a call one day. I'm doing my show, and I'm doing the show like the one I described where I'm hypnotizing people to speak languages from other planets, which, by the way, the show is going on in Carlsbad right now. North County, San Diego.
What? So explain that. Like Nanu Nanu? Like
yeah, exactly like
walk
that.
Walk.
Yeah, that's exactly like that. So I hypnotize people to walk on broken glass, speak languages from other planets, do the craziest things. It's a fun show. They can go to certaintytheater.com and find out more about the show. So I'm doing the show in Vegas at a major strip hotel, and I get a call between shows, and the woman says, I have a big roller here, a whale, that wants you to help them become a non-smoker. Can you help them? What would you charge? And I said, I don't really do sessions anymore, but I'm happy to send over a non-smoking kit. Gratis, no charge. She said, he's not really a kit kind of guy. She said, he'll pay you whatever, 50, 60, whatever. I said, 50 or 60 what? She said, $50,000 or $60,000, whatever you want. I said, who is this person? She tells me his name. His name's Kerry Packard. And
I know his son.
Yes, of course.
Really? He's one of a good friend of mine, James.
Yeah, so Kerry
wow.
Packard.
He'd pay you $500,000.
Hold on. I apparently wasn't thinking big enough.
You weren't. So, I was, you know.
Now I know. So at any rate, I said, let me do my show and I'll get back to you. So I do some research, find out he's the guy that tips the waitress $250,000
yes.
for entering his ashtray.
Yes.
Pays off whole mortgages for
yes.
the waitress.
Buys people. He's the greatest guy ever.
Yes.
Amazing.
He was. And so I get back on the phone with her afterwards and she says, will you do the session? I said, I'll do it for $100,000. And she said, okay. He says, yes, be over here at 3 o'clock tomorrow. So I come over the next day at 3 o'clock and the, room is filled with people and everything you can think to smoke, cigars, pipes, all different kinds of cigarettes all over the place. He's a fiend. And he said, how does this work? I said, first thing is we've got to clear out anything that can be smoked, throw it in the trash. You're never going to need it again. People of authority have certainty.
Right.
I said, the second thing is I need all your people to leave us alone so I can have some privacy with you. He goes like this, just they all scatter, grab everything, they leave. And I sit down beside him. He said, all right, how's this work? I said, how do you want to take care of the investment? He said, cash, chips, check, whatever you want. I don't care. I said, I'll take cash, please. And he says, okay. I said, before we do the session, he says, I've got good credit. I got $15 million in credit here. I'm good for it. I said, sir, I'm sure you understand the value of a service rendered diminishes rapidly after that service has been rendered. If I make you a non-smoker, which I'm about to, you have no reason to pay me. He said, I'm good for it. I said, all right. Have a nice day. And I stand up and I turn to leave. I get to the door and he says, hey, before you go, I saw your show last week. You're amazing. How did you make that girl stiff and rigid, lay her across those supports and then stand on her abdomen? I said, what I did, Mr. Packard, is I looked into her eyes and I began to speak to her in a low, dulcet tone. As I did, her eyes began to blink. Her mouth began to smile, just like yours is now. And her eyes slowly closed down. And as her eyes now closed down, and I put him in trance, did the whole session, get done. He opens his eyes. He says, you're remarkable. I said, yes, I am. That'd be cash, please. He walks over to the safe, pulls out cash, hands it to me, and I'm on my way.
And never smoked again?
Never smoked again, as far as I know. Yeah. So it's been amazing. It's been an amazing life. And, you know, for me on a personal level, it's been remarkable. And the one thing, again, I want to say to everybody listening to this podcast is ultimately we are who we think we are. And we get to choose that. And too many people let other people determine who they are. You know, I don't care if the whole world is telling you something. It's not true if you don't want it to be true.
Couldn't agree more. Guys, Marshall Silva, the man, the myth, the legend. The real deal for sure. Thanks, awesome, buddy. That was great. Thank you.
You bet.